So my last paper actually had, on the net, actually had cosmology in the title, but you had a talk on that at the conference by my collaborator. So I'm going to skip that and do something which is more fun for me, which is to talk about something I'm working on right now. In fact, I haven't even got all the signs sorted out. I found 3 sign errors in the last hour. But nevertheless, it's I think it's an interesting, though somewhat speculative, piece of work. And it's fun for me because I get to get some feedback on something I'm thinking on about now. There isn't a lot of cosmology in this, though I hope that the ideas that I'm working with will ultimately be useful in understanding what string theory can tell us about cosmology. So my title is Matrix Model. For ADS2, and I'll do three different things in the talk. I'll talk about the space-time solutions of the so-called type 0A string theory in 2 dimensions. In particular, there'll be some black holes with tachyon hair. And then I'll talk about, what's interesting about this particular kind of string theory, for those of you who don't know, is it's exactly soluble. It's a quantum mechanically exactly soluble. So this is a laboratory in which we can do some calculations in the space-time picture and then relate them to some exact results in the string theory. So this is very different from string theories in higher dimensions where we can do a lot of non-perturbative calculations, but we can't really solve it exactly. So then I'll talk about the solutions of the exact string theoretic representation of this system. And in relating them, I'll find a candidate for an ADS2 matrix model. That is an exact solution of string theory on ADS2. And I'll end with some discussion of the non-trivial role played by time in string theory, which is nicely illustrated in this example. So let me start with the space-time effective action, which is the sort of simplest approximation to this particular string theory, which lives in 2 dimensions. So the space-time effective action, so integral over 2-dimensional space-time, there's a dilaton field, e to the minus 2 phi, and then there's r scalar curvature plus 4 times the gradient of the dilaton squared plus 4, and then there's minus 1/2 the gradient squared of the tachyon field plus 1/2, which corresponds to a negative mass tachyon field squared. Okay, this is more or less the usual matrix model, but in the 0A matrix model, there's more terms, and the extra terms look like minus q squared over 4 pi, and then minus q squared over pi times t squared plus dot, dot, dot. So this is a so-called tachyon field. And it's tachyon because it's called a tachyon field because its mass is negative. Now, this theory actually has also an electric field, but an electric field in two space-time dimensions has no dynamical degrees of freedom. So you can just study the theory in backgrounds with flux Q, and the theory in backgrounds with flux Q is described by the effect of action with this Q squared sitting in the Lagrangian there. But notice also that this Q squared gives a mass to the tachyon field when it's on. Now, what's the plus dot dot dot? Well, the plus dot 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 is in some circumstances can be ignored, and in some circumstances is quite important. So, for example, of a term that you could have here, let me write the scalar squared times t squared, which would be something that would correct the tachyon mass. So I'm working in string units here, alpha prime equals 1. So if we ever encounter any curvatures of order 1, we can't really trust this Lagrangian. OK, so the first thing I want to do.
Sorry, Andy?
Yeah.
I mean, usually in two dimensions, the tachyon is massless. I mean, the so-called tachyon.
Yeah.
This is really a tachyon. This is really massless.
And the reason it's really massless is that the standard vacuum of this theory is, and I'm not really going to try to get all the factors of 2 right, but it's something like e to the minus 2 phi is e to the minus 2 sigma. And so in order to write a standard propagating field, we have to have a rescaled, so we define t tilde is equal to e to the minus phi t, and then we find that the t tilde Lagrangian looks like d squared x, so that gets rid of this e to the minus 2 phi. The t tilde Lagrangian looks like d squared x square root of minus g grad t tilde squared plus del phi squared, 1 minus del phi squared, which is just 1 in this background, t tilde squared. So it becomes massless because of the coupling to the dilaton. Now, there's another term coming from here, which looks like e to the 2 phi t tilde squared times q squared. And this, that weak coupling, which is where e to the phi is small, this gives an exponentially small correction to the mass, but it could become important when the coupling becomes strong. Well, I cribbed this Lagrangian out of Douglas and the other 5 brains, I forget. Actually, I should say it because it's an important paper. Who is it? It's Douglas, Martinek, Moldesina, Cyborg, Kutuzov, was Kutuzov? And Klebanov, yeah. And there was also a paper on this, though they didn't write down the Lagrangian, by Takayanagi and Tumbas. So I just cribbed it out of there. The way they write it in there suggests that Q is an integer, but it wasn't that important to them, so I'm not sure that they really worried about their normalization. Yeah.
Are remote fields not going to be important for your discussion?
Well, yes, they are, because the field strength is a Ramon-Ramon field.
Okay.
And so that this Q is a Ramon-Ramon flux.
They're also
There's
the propagating Ramon.
In the zero B theory, there's the propagating Ramon-Ramon scalar.
Okay.
But here we don't have a Ramon-Ramon scalar. The tachyon is the only scalar. Okay, so first let me talk about the solutions of this. And I think that, let's first talk about the solutions without the tachyon in them. And the solutions without the tachyon in them, that is static solutions, where the tachyon is equal to zero, I think were first written down by Banks and O'Loughlin. Is that right? I saw Tom somewhere here.
It's possible.
I think it was first written down by Banks and O'Loughlin in a much more general context of finding general solutions of everything. And then
there was also a paper published in Spintawadia and some other
paper. Would they have looked at this? With the Q squared term. You did the Q squared term. Okay, but more recently, this particular example was studied by Berkowitz, Gukoff, and somebody else. And the solutions can be written like this. Let's see, we have ds squared is equal to minus 1 plus phi minus phi naught minus a half e to the 2 phi. Dt squared minus d sigma squared. And where sigma, we should regard this phi as a function of sigma. But the way we get it is we write sigma is equal to the integral up to phi of d phi prime of 1 over this business, 1 plus phi minus phi naught minus a half e to the 2 phi. And phi naught is equal to minus log q over 4 root pi. Now, there's actually one parameter. Roughly speaking, we should think of this as a spherical reduction of a charged black hole. Because this, if you start in higher dimensions and you add a black hole with charge and you do the spherically symmetric sector, you get terms that look like this. And in the, maybe I better check that sign. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So what you would expect is a one-parameter family of solutions corresponding to an extremal black hole and then excited black holes. And there is such a one-parameter family, and I think it amounts to changing this constant here. What I've written for you, and it can be found in the literature, what I've written for you, I'm just interested in quantum mechanically stable solutions, and so what I've written for you is the extremal solution. And the extremal solution is characterized by the fact that when phi goes to phi naught, this thing has a, there's q squared over 8 pi squared here. Q squared over 8 pi, q squared over 8 pi. When phi goes to phi naught, this thing has a double zero. Okay. Yeah.
The minus 2 phi due to the minus 2 sigma on the right is when you don't have any black hole?
No. This is a solution ignoring the Q term.
Oh.
This is the standard linear dilaton vacuum. And so, and it's still true if I draw this picture that out at infinity, following the revolution and conventions introduced by Joe, that infinity is on the left here, this is minus sigma, or this is sigma very negative, and here we have the linear dilaton vacuum, and you can easily see here that sigma is equal to phi because this term is exponentially small, and the metric just goes to the flat metric. So we have the standard linear dilaton vacuum, and that makes sense because when e to the phi is small, this is large, and we can relatively neglect this term. But we can't neglect this term as we get into strong coupling. And so if you didn't have the Q squared term, what you find is you just have linear dilaton vacuum forever. But if you add the Q squared term, instead of a linear dilaton vacuum, you get an ADS2 region. So we have an ADS2 region here. And then if we were to continue this picture, take the analytic, of course, for linear dilaton vacuum, this would be geodesically complete. But it's not geodesically complete anymore because of this ADS2 region. And what we would get would be basically the Penrose diagram for Reisner-Nordström with, excuse my blackboard technique, with an infinite series of repeating universes with horizons. And there's an ADS2 region. I need some colored chalk. The ADS2 region, which is what I'm going to be most interested in, is this region here. So these coordinates do not cover the entire space-time. They end at the horizon. Okay, any questions?
But you're saying the whole sort of Reisner-Nordström picture is a solution of this? The whole extreme Reisner-Nordström is a solution of this theory?
Yeah, I think so. I have to say, I haven't worked out the analytic continuation. What I really did is I looked near the horizon, and near the horizon, it's easy to see from here, since this has a double zero, that sigma goes like 1 over phi minus, right, what is it exactly? Yeah, it's 1 over phi minus phi naught, and therefore, this metric in this region goes like minus dt squared plus d sigma squared over sigma squared. Okay, but now here's the catch. The catch is that what I wrote here is actually correct, and there is no factor of Q in the metric. Q drops out. So the radius of curvature of this near horizon ADS2 region is of order 1 in string units. So we can't really trust this because the higher order corrections could ruin it. Now, even though the radius of curvature is of order 1 in string units, the string coupling, as you can easily see from this formula, can be made arbitrarily weak. So we don't have to, we can control string loop corrections, but we can't control string alpha prime corrections. So this is a problem, whether or not there really is an ADS2 solution here, is a problem for the string world sheet. In principle, we could try to find a conformal field theory that, conformal field theories can solve this kind of problem. Here, however, it's a Ramon-Ramon conformal field theory, so it's not completely, it's far from trivial to find it exactly.
Is the width of the ADS region wider than its curvature radius as well?
Yeah, that must be controlled by, yeah, that's right, that's controlled by Q. This distance, I guess, is infinite. Okay, so I'm just going to proceed on the assumption that this ADS2 region really is there. And I'm going to look at the matrix model story and see what we get. Now, and see if there's a mirror of this, if there's some evidence for an ADS2 region in the matrix model story where we can compute things exactly.
So but we have... the Tachyon is just zero?
This is a solution in which the tachyon is just zero. And notice also, it's easy to check that in this region, we still have a tachyon field. It's not hard to see that if you use this Lagrangian, the tachyon mass is positive. But again, we can't really trust that because their terms were not what we're not including that could be important in this region, because R is of order 1. What I will do towards the end is turn this around and show that if we properly identify where this ADS2 is in the matrix model, we can turn it into a computation of the tachyon mass.
Why,
from the matrix model.
Why can't you control at least the tachyon mass by taking large Q?
Because what happens is that in this region, e to the minus 2 phi is itself of order Q squared. So we have a Q squared in front of the entire Lagrangian. And so the kinetic term, you know, it's the ratio of the coefficient of the t squared term to the...
And these r squared t squared terms will also have that same...
The r squared t squared terms would have that same property because they would have an e to the minus 2 phi in front of them.
Can there be terms that are like t to the fourth on the right-hand side?
Yes.
A bit small? You can get a positive mass for a different expectation value?
Yes, anything could happen. Okay, so, but what, I guess what I want to say here is that, part of what I want to say here is that there's an interesting problem of trying to find this ADS2 conformal field theory, which we might hope to think about, but it's not trivial.
And in this picture, what happens when Q goes to zero, since the ADS is dependent on Q, how does it push out in a way?
When Q goes to zero, phi naught, the critical value goes to infinity. And so you just get linear dilaton vacuum forever. You never reach the horizon.
It just gets pushed.
Yeah. Okay. So the next thing I want to talk about is the... tachyon hair. So the tachyon here, so if we look at the, so we have the linearized tachyon equation of motion, which is box T. So I'm just going to analyze the linear equation. So it's box T is equal to whatever, minus a half T plus this Q squared term, e to the 2 phi T. And in this region here, in the linear dilaton vacuum, it's just the standard story. And T, we know, has two static, I'm just looking at static solutions now, has two static solutions, which we can write as mu e to the sigma minus A. And in the usual matrix model, A is some number which it's a little bit convention dependent, but anyway can be computed. So there's one kind of hair that you can add to this solution when you just have Q equals zero in the linear dilaton story. But now let's ask what happens here. So we have so this is for sigma going to minus infinity out here. And let me draw here sigma. So this is sigma, this is minus infinity, and this is plus infinity. At sigma goes to plus infinity, the dilaton is constant, and we just have a massive field in ADS2. And with the ADS2 metric written here, and the solutions will go like T equals some constant let me call it B plus times E to the, times sigma to the H plus B minus sigma to the H minus, where H plus or minus is equal to a half 1 plus or minus the square root of 1 plus 4 m tachyon squared. So this is just standard. If you write out this wave equation in these coordinates, you find that it has these two power law solutions. Now, we want this to be well-behaved on the horizon here, which is sigma equals plus infinity. And we could read off m tachyon squared from here. We wouldn't really trust it, but we could read it off. And we would find that h plus had one positive. H plus was positive and H minus was negative. So I'm going to, I don't really care about what the values of H plus and H minus are, but I want to know that one is positive and one is negative. And if one is positive and one is negative, this solution is diverging on the horizon, and this solution is going to zero. Remember, the horizon is at sigma equals minus infinity. So over here, I've got a two-parameter family of solutions, mu and a. And over here, I've got a two-parameter family. And if I start, you might be able to solve this equation exactly. If not, you could solve it numerically. But if you start with a general solution over here in this two-parameter family, you'll end up with some general linear combination of these two parameters over here. I want to consider only the solutions which have this equal to 0, and that'll translate into some linear, to some particular value of A. So I'm going to claim that there's a one-parameter family of tachyon-Hare solutions that I can add on top of this extremal black hole. Okay, yeah, what?
I just wanted to be completely clear. So
that
H plus is one, H
plus and H minus have one positive and one negative value is an assumption. Right?
It's longer
so
than
well, tachyon
is positive. It's not zero.
It's
an assumption.
Yeah.
It's just something
you might generically expect to be true, no matter what.
Well, it's true for, it's true roughly half the time. Yeah.
As long as the tachyon is.
And again, we'll have a picture which will allow us to compute it from the matrix model. Yeah?
I'm suddenly confused. If I take a ordinary higher dimensional Schwarzschild ADS black hole, and I take an ordinary massive scalar field, it looks like your argument goes through. At infinity, we know the massive scalar field.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about that, actually. And I think that the answer is that what we're really doing here, the massless field at infinity is T tilde.
Yeah.
And T tilde doesn't have this factor in front of it. So T tilde, the rescaled T is growing linearly. And you can violate the no-Hare theorem if you have scalar fields which are growing at infinity. And for some reason, I mean, when you prove the no-Hare theorem, you know, there's two linear solutions at infinity, and you only allow one of them. For some reason in the matrix model, we're happy to allow both of them. We study the matrix model with both values of those parameters. Okay. So let me just write this, that there's a one-parameter family. Maybe I'll leave this picture up. One-parameter family of labeled by mu of static extremal solutions. Okay. Now let's go to the matrix model. So before we added this Q squared term, a much studied and famous duality relation was that the string theory, the two-dimensional string theory with this low energy effective action, is equivalent to a theory of free fermions with a Hamiltonian, H is a half integral dx, psi dagger of x, fermionic Hamiltonian, p squared, i.e. d by dx squared, minus x squared, psi of x. So that's a theory of free fermions moving in a potential that is upside down. And in the standard story, one considers not the ground state of this system, but a state in which the Fermi C has been filled up to an energy minus mu, and the tachyons moving in and out here, this is before we added the Q squared term, the tachyons moving in and out are ripples on the Fermi C, which come in and bounce back out again. So I'm not going to try to explain that. I just want you to accept that this theory, this space-time string theory, is solved exactly by turning it into a theory of free fermions where everything can be easily calculated. But now, what happens when you add the Q squared term? I'm not going to try to derive this fact either. I'm just going to tell you that in those papers I wrote down, that the claim is that all you have to do is change this potential, and I've written it in a bad place here, plus Q squared, by adding a term, a positive term, which looks like plus Q squared over X squared. So now we have a potential that looks like this and goes up to infinity at x equals 0. So this is x, and this is v of x. So this is the q squared over x squared piece, and this is the minus, it doesn't turn around like that. This is the minus x squared piece, and this is some x over order q squared, where the two things are about the same size. Okay, so now the first thing to notice is that this theory also has a one-parameter family of exact. Once I add the, this theory also has a one-parameter. Well, actually, let me pause and see if there are any questions about not how I got this, but what it is. Yeah.
Very mundane. When x, isn't it x equals square root of q when these two terms are the same?
X equals q.
No.
No.
Square root.
X squared equals q instead of x equals q squared.
Yeah. X squared equals q. Yeah.
Also, before you have this term, you're supposed to fill both sides of the Fermi C, right?
Yeah. But this barrier...
So you're saying the barrier is so strong...
This barrier has infinite action.
Right.
So you can't tunnel through it, so we don't have to worry about the other side of the Fermi C. In the zero boost story, you have to talk about the other side of the Fermi C, but here you just have a different matrix model that doesn't have the other side. And because of that, see, in this story, it was pretty confusing what happens when mu, the energy of the Fermi C, gets above the barrier. But here we seem to be able to just do whatever we want. Okay.
Let me see, all the way down to x equals 0, that this goes like 1 over x squared. You know that's sort of, well, that's exact.
No, I don't know that. That's what's in the papers.
Okay.
I think they probably claim that. Okay. now this also has a one-parameter family of solutions, namely the level mu of the Fermi C. So that's a one-parameter family of quantum mechanically stable exact solutions. And so I want to identify, so the picture fits together because I want to identify the level of the Fermi C with the strength of the tachyon here, mu. Now, when Q is zero, this is known to be correct, and really all I'm doing here is saying that the parameter that is there when Q not equal to zero is still there when Q, that's there when Q is equal to zero, is still there for non-zero Q, but it comes out a little differently. It's this tachyon here, which is, instead of growing exponentially into some strong coupling region, is actually going to zero at the horizon. The next thing I want to, and I guess I have to state this as a conjecture, or I should state this as a conjecture, that the ADS2 region here is the region in which the dynamics, so deep in this region, the dynamics is dominated by this term, and we can ignore the minus x squared piece. And so I want to conjecture that the ADS2 region is described by a free fermion matrix model. Actually, I never said what a matrix model was. That's sort of a third picture of this that I guess isn't really going to be important. The ADS2 region is described by a free fermion theory with potential Q squared over X squared. In other words, deep in this region, I can just drop this minus X squared term and just look at this theory as a new matrix model. Now, one thing nice happens now, and this is the really the only sort of piece of evidence for this conjecture, and it's certainly not as strong as I'd like it to be, but I hope, anyway, it's more than scale invariance, SL2R invariance. So this ADS2 region has an SL2R invariance, which could be written by, we could write, first of all, the Hamiltonian. Let me draw now a picture of ADS2.
Actually, a quick question before you do that. So there's this other region past ADS2, sort of on down towards the singularity.
Here?
Yeah, right. So.
Behind the horizon? Yeah, I'm not going to say anything about that.
Okay. Do you think anything can be said about that from this perspective?
Well, would we be able to say there's a similar region beyond the ADS5 region in a three brain? Well, there it's smooth, but okay. There's a similar region beyond the BTZ black holes if the angular momentum is zero, if you tie them onto an asymptotically flat region, and we've never been able to describe those regions in string theory. We should, but. Okay, so the region that's being covered, this near horizon region isn't all of ADS2. The ADS2 is the pink area, and the near horizon region is like a Poincaré patch of ADS2. And the time that the T of this solution here is doing this, so-called Poincaré time. And so the Hamiltonian, we should identify this Hamiltonian with I d by dt, where this is the time. Now, what are the other generators? Well, the other generators are the scale transformation, the thing that scales both sigma and t. You look unhappy, Joe. And that's
my question. I've actually gotten lost. Is ADS2 by itself a solution to two-dimensional string theory? Or is there a dilaton supporting it? How does this get to the
okay.
solution?
All right, if I take this... All right, good. I should have said that more clearly. If I take this Lagrangian and ignore the fact that I'm having trouble with alpha prime corrections, there's a solution in which the dilaton is a constant given by this phi naught, and the metric is this.
And there's Ramon flux? Oh, sorry.
And there's Ramon flux. Q squared is the Ramon flux. And that is the near horizon solution here. In other words, this black hole is the standard thing. It's interpolating between the linear dilaton vacuum and the near horizon ADS2. Okay, so this Lagrangian has that as a solution, though alpha prime can't be trusted. Corrections could be large. We could try to find that solution by playing with Ramon world sheet CFTs. That certainly hasn't been done. Okay, now the dilational symmetry is d is equal to 2i sigma d sigma plus 2i t dt. That rescales both t and sigma. And then the special conformal symmetry is 2i t sigma d sigma plus I t squared dt. And these are by an SL2i algebra, which is dh is minus 2ih, and dk is plus 2ik, and h with k is minus id. I'm not promising all my signs are right. All right. Now, but on the other hand, so this is a classic example studied in depth by Delfero, Fulbini, and Furlan of conformally invariant quantum mechanics. And if this is H, we have a similar expression for D, where in the middle here we have XP plus PX times a half. And then the expression for K just has a half X squared in the middle. And so these, the isometries, the SL2R isometries of ADS2 exactly match the SL2R symmetry of the conformal quantum mechanics. So that was the nice thing that happened. The nice thing that happened was in this near horizon region, we got, when we dropped the minus x squared term, which seems to be small there, we got something which is a conformal quantum mechanics. And so if this conjecture is right, it provides an example of ADS2 CFT1 duality. Okay. Is there a question?
I mean, isn't the ADS, I mean, Q drops out of that.
Right.
Of the ADS, but it doesn't drop out of the Hamiltonian of the some transformation that does. Okay. So it's, I'm not sure what K does.
Wait, what? Let's see. A. Yeah, that's a good point.
Where does it approach?
Well, this theory. This theory. Well, it's true. First of all, it's true here that this obeys this algebra with any Q. Okay. This theory involves, this theory of course still, the string theory still involves Q because the dilaton has to be Q. So it doesn't drop out of the theory, it drops out of the geometry. Now, maybe there's more to be said about how we should expect those to match up, but I haven't thought carefully about that. That's a good question. All right. So now, the tachyon mass. And now, lest you be disappointed, I found three scenarios in my derivation of the tachyon mass. So I'm going to tell you how I'll do it, but just this morning, I'm going to tell you how I do it, but I'm not going to write the actual value down on the board because I'd probably just have to change it later. But it can be computed from comparing the action of D in these two different pictures. So here in this picture, we have a Fermi C, which obeys P squared plus Q squared over X squared is equal to mu. So now we have some state which is semi-classically described by this Fermi surface. And now we act on it with e to the i alpha d, p squared plus q squared over x squared. And d scales x and p in the opposite way, e to the minus I alpha d. So this will end up being equal to e to the 2 alpha p squared plus q squared over x squared. And so if we started out with the Fermi C located at mu, the mu Fermi C is located at e to the 2 alpha mu. But this is sort of obvious, right? It just follows from these commutation relations that if you have an eigenstate of a Hamiltonian with some eigenvalue h, you can get a new eigenstate of a Hamiltonian by acting with e to the 2 alpha d where the eigenvalue of h is rescaled. Now we want to ask, okay, so this is in the free fermion picture, and since everything is exact and we have exact control over the theory in the free fermion picture, we should believe this answer. On the other hand, what about in the space-time picture? Well, in the space-time picture, we had a T okay, I'm just going to erase this. And I'm going to write this as the two sort of forms of H. Okay, now the tachyon field in the space-time picture, the tachyon field in the near horizon region, first of all, was proportional to mu, this parameter out at infinity, because when we do the matching, everything is linear. So if it's mu out, if we multiply the tachyon field by 17 here, we multiply it by 17 here. So it's proportional to this mu. And it's going like sigma to the h minus. Therefore, if we act on it with e to the I alpha d, now using the space-time representation of d, which is just sigma d sigma, we get that this goes like mu e to the 2 alpha h minus sigma to the h minus. So again, we see in the space-time picture that acting on the solutions with this dilation operator D is equivalent to rescaling mu. And furthermore, we can, by identifying, the value I think I got this morning was H minus equals minus 1. So, and H minus is related to M by H is equal to a half 1 minus square root of 1 plus 4M squared. So this would correspond to m squared is equal to 2. I told you I wasn't going to write this down, but I am anyway. 2 in the units of the ADS radius. Okay? So if we accept that the matrix model is describing the physics in this region, we can actually compute from that what the tachyon mass is in that region, even though from the space-time point of view, there's uncontrollable higher-order corrections. Yeah?
What happens if the mu equals zero point?
Mu equals zero.
This is just true for large mu, isn't it?
This should be true for large mu, because at mu equals zero, you see, this potential is looking like this. And at mu equals zero, the tachyon never gets into the ADS2 region. So we really only want to think about this for large mu. Okay, now let me say the final and what I view is the most interesting part of this way of thinking about.
Sorry, Andy, I didn't exactly understand that, because there's some way in which mu gets rescaled, right? When you take this limit and go to ADS2, the fermion model you have certainly has a perfectly, you know, a parameter mu that can take on any value whatsoever. Right. So,
yeah.
What are you, I mean, are we supposed to just not believe this, that this model makes any sense for small mu?
Well, if I tried to, where did I get this formula from? I got this formula by looking at the asymptotic form near the horizon. Mm-hmm. And that would only be valid if, you know, we get towards the horizon. And
no, I understand that if you take the mu in the original matrix model to be too small, then you'll never get to the horizon. But since your final matrix model has a mu that takes on all possible values, doesn't that mean there's some meaning to, space-time meaning to all values of this parameter?
Oh, I see what you mean.
You're telling us you have an exact...
I see. Okay, I wasn't hearing the question in that way. Yes, okay, then fine. So then mu is zero and T is zero and we're in the ground state of the... There's no... Nothing's excited at all. And so the energy is rescaled and remains zero.
But then the potential model of X squared, mu equals zero, is zero or whatever.
Have no fermions.
Yeah. I mean, basically, what's the quantum state of ADS2 without any excitation?
It's the ground state. It's the ground state. Notice that having mu non-zero, having mu non-zero breaks the SL2R symmetry. So the states that we are studying are spontaneously breaking the SL2R symmetry. But there is a theory which has the SL2R symmetry. That's the theory, the thing with no fermions at all. Okay, so but let me now go on to what I think is the most interesting part, which is that as soon as we draw this picture, we know that this is a very bad way to look at ADS2, to slice it this way. What we really want to do is have some kind of slicing of time that goes like this. And that corresponds to a different generator of the SL2R algebra. And indeed, we can define L naught equals a half H plus K, and L plus or minus 1 is equal to a half H minus K minus or plus ID. And then these obey the commutation relations in the usual form indicated by these hopefully familiar letters here. And L naught is just the generator, you know, it's H plus K, it just works out to be the generator of global time. And in terms of the matrix model, it turns out to be L naught is now equal to a half psi dagger of x, p squared plus q squared over x squared plus x squared. Okay, so now I think if we want to study this, it's not the same as what we had before. There's a crucial sign difference there. Okay, and so if we want to study this ADS2 matrix model, we'd be much better off studying not eigenstates of H, but eigenstates of L0. Because L0 is, you know, eigenstates of H form a continuum because we've got a potential like this, whereas L0, eigenstates of L0, we've had this plus x squared, so we have a nice discrete spectrum. This problem's been solved. Exactly. And so that would correspond to the discreteness that we're accustomed to of excitations of ADS2. So just give me a second, Steve, because I'm almost finished. Okay. So I think that this is a very important lesson for the matrix model. The matrix model, after all, is supposed to be a theory of gravity. And we know that in theories of gravity, there are many different definitions of time. And we should, you know, think about it as a generally covariant theory and not have some ironclad fixed definition of time. Whereas what we're used to thinking about in the matrix model is that there's, you know, God and whoever else gave us this Hamiltonian of the matrix quantum mechanics, and everything always has to be analyzed with respect to that Hamiltonian. But there are all kinds of other generators that act on that quantum mechanics, and presumably they correspond to different time slicings of the space-time described by the matrix model. And here I hope to have given one fairly explicit example of how that might work. So let me stop there.